Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. Joined by Lance Meadow, I am John Schmelk. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Giants now at 503-3. If you want to give us a call and chat some Giants football with us, it's 201-939-4513. Or on Twitter, go to hashtag GiantsChat, and we can chat that way as well. Lance, I know you went through the game upwards and downwards and sideways and leftwards and rightwards.
Every which angle.
With Paul Dottino yesterday. I listened to a lot of the show, so I know kind of what you guys touched on. A few things that I want to touch on, and, you know, there were a bunch of things over the past 4 weeks during the Giants' three-game losing streak that we discussed that the Giants had to get better at. Well, they didn't solve all their problems against the Ravens, but they solved enough of them where they were able to come out with a close victory with some assistance from the Baltimore Ravens. And this is kind of my overarching theme here. You know, some of the things we talked about deficiencies, Lance, from the Giants' perspective this season were turnovers. Still had too many of those. Three turnovers minus three. Bad. Got to get fixed. They still had more than 100 yards of penalties. Now, if you want to question the veracity of those penalties, I understand. But please, let's not take this whole show and complain about penalties.
And it's still a continuous theme, regardless. They
Correct.
Exist, no matter how you look at it.
That problem did not get fixed. The Giants still did not run the ball effectively enough in this game. Overall, the Giants ran it 17 times for 38 yards. They threw it 46 times, so that's about a 30% run percentage. That has to, actually, about 25% run percentage. That has to be better. Not good enough. Now, here's what did change and allowed the Giants to win. Two things. One, big plays on offense. We talked about how through the first 5 weeks, the Giants had one scoring play of 20 yards or more. That was to Sterling Shepard against the Redskins. Well, to quote Lance Meadow, voila, that changed in week number six against the Baltimore Ravens with the two long touchdowns to Odell Beckham Jr.
And the
big
third
change.
Catch, remember, for 43 yards, too.
Correct.
And that gets involved in the game-changing big plays.
And then, in addition to that, the other thing we've talked about the first 3 weeks is how many real wow plays that were above the X's and O's did the Giants really make the first five games of the year? You're like, wow, that's unbelievable. Well, we finally saw that thanks to Eli, thanks to Beckham in this particular game. And frankly, more because of Beckham than Eli. I mean, it's not like Eli was throwing unbelievable throws for Beckham to get those catches and runs. The first one was a great throw. The second one was just a simple slant. But those were some of the things that the Giants fixed. Now, all the problems, by no means, Lance, are they solved. There's still a lot of cleaning up to do. Ben McAdoo, in fact, if I bring up his transcript from his conference call yesterday, made the point before he took questions, and he was very careful to make this point before he went to questions from the media. And I'll read it, and I think this is how I think of it, too. As a team moving forward, we need to eliminate the bad football that's on film. Lining up offside, that gave the Ravens a first down on a punt. Unsportsmanlike conduct, that Beckham taking off the helmet penalty. A drag route in 2 minutes. We have to get the first down there. I'm assuming he's talking about the Larry Donnell play on the sideline.
He did
not identify the marker. Dropping back in man coverage. Too many deep throws and allowing big plays, which has been a problem, against the Ravens. There's things we need to clean up that are going to come back and bite us if we don't. And we mentioned the penalties. We mentioned the turnovers as well. So still things to clean up, but it's certainly an improvement over what we saw against the Packers and the Vikings.
Yeah, I mean, there's clearly, as you've documented, there's a number of issues that are continue to rear their ugly head. But, you know, I think also pass protection was a key turning point in the game against the Ravens.
They
gave Eli Manning an opportunity to assess the field, throw down the field, which was a missing element over the last few contests. So it's important to note that as well. And the penalties, what made them at least digestible, even though the fans are going to argue here and there, and I'm not necessarily discussing the exact calls. I'm talking about when your opponent gets 15 of their own penalties
Correct.
For well over 100 yards, they tend to balance out, and it doesn't come back to bite you. But you can't bank on that happening all the time. That's the key. Can't go into a game saying, oh, well, don't worry, we can have seven mishaps because the opposition's going to double that up, and it's okay if we turn the ball over three times. Cannot bank on that.
And it also helped that on the first Odell Beckham Jr. touchdown, you had a backup safety having to play corner because of all the Ravens' injuries, and that's a mismatch. And that was something the Giants were able to take advantage of. One more thing I want to say before we get to your calls at 201-939-4513, and we'll touch on London as well before we get to your calls because we're starting to kind of ramp up for London. I don't think fans quite realize – what Eli Manning does for this team pre-snap in terms of his adjustments, his audibles, and things like that. You know, is Eli the most accurate quarterback in the NFL? No, he makes some bad throws. He wobbles throws sometimes. I get all that. You know, it happens. No argument. But if you look at Giants.com, hey, Dave, is Anatomy the Play up yet? My written version, it is. Go to Giants.com, and I did a written version of Anatomy of a Play. I took a look at Beckham's first touchdown. And what Eli Manning was able to do pre-snap on that play was, quite frankly, beyond my recognition and understanding. He was able to figure out, before the play even began, that Ladarius Webb, for no good reason, mind you, would drop down into the shallow middle of the field and double-team Jarrell Adams rather than playing over the top at Odell Beckham Jr. So what does Eli do before the play? He gives Beckham a little bit of a chicken wing, which was the signal, I guess, for a fly pattern.
This show's now complete that you did the chicken wing. Yes, thank you.
So Beckham was supposed to run a stop on that play. So Beckham runs the stop, but Eli's signal before the snap told him to run a stop and go.
So he changed and
so
adjusted.
So he looks to his left first for Shepard and Cruz. The offensive line gives him time to go back the other direction. Beckham runs a stop. Eli looks at him. Corner bites. Ladarius Webb, as Eli Manning was able to diagnose before the play, crashes down on Jarrell Adams. The entire deep left side of the field is wide open, allowing Odell Beckham to get separation on Anthony Levine, the Ravens' backup safety, who had to play corner again because of all the injuries, and they beat them deep for the touchdown. So I just thought it was a fantastic adjustment by Eli Manning. Eric Weddle was the only deep safety. He was all the way on the opposite hash. He doesn't have the speed at this age to get over there and make that play. And really, that play to me, Lance, and I know there are a lot of kind of back-and-forth turning points in this game, that play to me really, though, seemed to kind of get the offense cranking a little bit. And it really gave them confidence to move forward and make those big plays at the end of the game to win it. And I just think that play really showed the type of work and recognition Eli does before the snap to put the team in position to succeed if he gets the protection, if the receivers get open, and it makes everything work. I ran into him at breakfast this morning in the cafeteria. I was getting a water. I was walking out, and I pulled him aside. I said, Eli, because I did the story, and I hadn't talked to him yet, but Beckham had said after the game.
He did. He admitted. And he admitted the other touchdown, too. There was an adjustment, I believe, too, I thought.
There might have been.
I believe he alluded to another adjustment.
So I actually said, I'm like, Eli, it looked like you could tell before the snap that Ladarius Webb was going to crash down on the tight end. Did you really know that before you snapped the ball? He goes, yeah. it is typical Eli Manning. Uh-huh. You know, it was just, and I didn't want to get into why, because quite frankly, I'm not going to share that sort of stuff because that, you know, tips
people
off.
They make that adjustment again.
Exactly. Yeah. But I just think it's one of those things where if you look at that formation before the ball is snapped, it looks like the Ravens are playing two safeties deep. They're both on just outside the hash marks, between the numbers and the hash marks. If you go to the initial picture on the website, Lance, on the photo, first one, look where these two safeties are. There's no reason to think that they're going to all of a sudden come back. It looks like they could be playing.
Because the linebackers are situated where you think that you have decent protection.
Yeah, you could have one running back be covered by one tight end and then Jarrell Adams taken by the other one. So I just thought it was unbelievable that Manning could figure out that guy was going to crash, and he gave Odell Beckham the route. And Beckham, again, said Eli's the smartest football guy he's ever been around in his post-game press conference. And I just thought that's one of those small things that Eli Manning does that I don't think a lot of fans recognize that puts the team in a real great position to succeed.
Well, that's the value of a veteran quarterback.
Yeah.
A quarterback that has experience in those circumstances, picks up those nuances on film, and can make the adjustments on the fly. Now, I don't want to get completely off topic, but, you know, somewhat it reminded me of this whole Tony Romo-Dak Prescott debate, and one of the things that I've brought up that people, I think, are overlooking in this narrative is the fact that Romo has experienced far more football than what Prescott brings to the table circumstances like this.
I've been very impressed, and I watched a good deal of that Packer-Cowboy game, because I think the whole thing is fascinating what's going on down there in terms of how they're going to decide what to do with their quarterbacks. And Prescott makes a lot of adjustments at the line. I mean, maybe they're not right. I don't know if they're right or not.
Well, but they're giving him the freedom and the flexibility
right,
to do that.
And they trust him to do it, which, frankly, for a rookie quarterback, is not common. And I think it seems to me, and again, I was going to rewatch the Eagles game yesterday, too, Eagles-Redskins. I did not have the opportunity yet. I'm going to try to do that today at some point. But planning this London trip has been a bit of a pain, trust me. But I think Prescott seems to be maintaining his strong play a little bit better than Carson Wentz's. I think people are catching on to some of the stuff Wentz does, at least for now. And again, it might happen for Prescott too. We'll see.
He threw his first interception in the last game, so.
And he had two other turnovers, two fumbles too. So he turned it over three times in that game to Dak Prescott, still beat the Packers. I just think it's interesting to see how those two rookie quarterbacks are playing. Because quite frankly, whatever happens this year, Giant fans are going to be seeing a lot of those two guys for the next 15 seasons.
They're the future of the division.
You better get ready for it.
And they're always going to be compared to one another because one guy you moved up to acquire and the other guy fell to you in the fourth round.
The other guy, the Cowboys, tried to move up and get two different guys before they settled for Dak Prescott. It shows what the hell anybody knows in scouting departments.
Yeah. And we've seen this happen before. Russell Wilson of the world and so forth. Mid-round quarterbacks sometimes pan out and become future quarterbacks for the future, guys that you can at least pan on and plan on using in the future and so forth. So,
all right, real quick, before we get to the calls, I want to give fans a taste for what the Giants are doing exactly for London. Because everyone knows the Rams are still out, already out there. They went right after that Lions game, basically a 10-game road trip for them. So they're practicing out there. The Giants will head out on a red-eye flight on Thursday night. We'll arrive Friday morning. It's pretty much you land, we're going right to practice. So they're counting on the players sleeping on that overnight flight, which isn't a gimme for everybody. A lot of times people have trouble sleeping on planes. I don't. I will sleep. Paul Dottino will not sleep. So
That's not a surprise.
No. So it really depends who you are and how you manage that. So the Giants will try to get their rest. They'll have their practice on Friday, which is really nothing more than a shorts and t-shirts glorified walkthrough. Then they'll have more of a real practice on Saturday,
which is what they normally do.
Right, which is what their normal schedule is. So, and then they'll play, I believe the game is 3:30 local time in London, I believe. 2:30 or 3:30 is mid-afternoon. I'm not exactly sure which. Is it a 5 or 6 hour time difference?
I thought it was a 6 hour time
difference. Then it would be 3:30. I thought it was 3:30.
Confirm that
right
now.
I'm pretty sure that's what it is.
It is 5:16
so
p.m.
5 hours.
In London.
So it'll be a 2:30 kickoff then.
There you go.
In London on Sunday afternoon. Then we hang out for about an hour after the game because they have to let the Rams get out first because they're the home team, so they get to travel first. And I guess both teams have to use similar facilities when they're leaving within the airport, so they have to let the Rams out first, and then we come in after them. So then we should probably leave Sunday night, and with the time change in the flight, I think in all, we leave at like 9 and we get back at 10, or leave at 10, get back at 11, something like that. So we basically get back Sunday night, and then the Giants obviously have to bye next week. So that's what the Giants' schedule is for London, for you folks out there. Just a heads up, we're not going to have a BBK on Friday, folks, because the equipment we're using to stream the show, we're bringing it to London. We will be streaming a special show, or at least we hope to, if all the bells and whistles and screwdrivers and connections cooperate.
Technology.
On Saturday afternoon from a Giants pub, Bob Papa and I will have a kind of a round table with Giant players and some fans. I'll be getting fan questions. He'll be with the players on the stage. And we'll do that live at some point. I believe it'll be Saturday morning, U.S. time, Saturday afternoon, London time. And then we'll be doing live hits from practice on Friday morning and Saturday morning. If you're up at 5, 6 a.m. in the U.S., you can enjoy those. I'm sure Dave Dominic will enjoy being up streaming those back here on Giants.com. He's pumped and excited. I can see it on his face. But we'll archive those for you as well, so you can check those out on Giants.com later on in the day. Should be fun.
Absolutely. A lot to look forward to. An interesting experience.
I honestly just want to get a camera. I'm tempted to hire a camera guy and just have him follow Dottino around.
Somebody asked me today on Twitter whether or not he's going to have his special runs in London. So I said,
well, he doesn't run, first of all. Walks.
Walks, excuse me. The power walks, however you want to describe it. So I said that, you know, Buckingham Palace has already put up the perimeter to at least showcase his talents. I could see that happening.
I guarantee you.
Put him on center stage.
Well, he could walk across London Bridge.
Yeah, he could
do everything. Tower Bridge, I guess.
But I think with the security that he demands and the attention that he brings to himself, I think it's important to have it in a setting where there's a lot of security around.
Now, I'm predicting a ridiculous statement from Paul Dottino when he returns. I think we're going to get some type of ridiculous statement like, you know, people talk about the River Thames and how great it is. I'll take the Passaic River any day.
So he's going to complain, is what you're saying.
Absolutely.
It's not necessarily a surprise.
You know, why do they have a queen? I don't understand. They don't have queens in New Jersey. What's going on? I don't get it.
Maybe he'll complain about the armed forces and so forth, too. I'm sure he'll, you know, the people who protect the queen. What, the Royal Armed
Guard?
The Royal Guards. I'm sure he'll have something. He'll have always something to say.
What are their official title? The guys with the big black hats and the red jackets, right? I forget their names.
I refer to them as the Royal Guard. So
I think they are the Royal Guard, but I think they do.
We look that up.
I think they do have a technical name that they have. I guarantee you, considering all the cloudiness they have in London, Tino will be the tannest person on the island. That much is absolutely true. That there's no question of.
Yes.
But he will be unhappy. I guarantee he'll complain about how cloudy it is. And it's going to be chilly and rainy most of the time we're there, which is par for
the
course.
Well, he always complains about the weather, so it wouldn't surprise me. Right. I find that very comfortable. But
now it's time for us to listen to your complaints. At 201-939-4513, or maybe your happiness off a Giants win. Hopefully more of those. But let's get to them again. 201.
Queen's lifeguards.
Is that really what it is?
Well, that's another term that I see here that they refer to them as.
I thought it was like some kind of fancy, like super
Well, I
fancy
see
name.
British Royal Guard and the Queen's lifeguards.
I feel like I should do
terms.
Maybe when we go out there, I can do – we're doing those live hits on Friday and Saturday. Yeah. Maybe I can do a how well do you know Britain and
could
London
be.
With Paul Dottino.
Well.
That could be fun.
He better study up then. I'm sure, though, he probably has an entire map.
No, I'm not going to tell
area.
Him. I want to catch him completely unawares.
No, but I'm saying knowing him, he probably has already Googled and done his homework so that he can map out and see what the scenery looks like. It would not surprise me one bit, knowing his routine when it comes to road trips and so forth. You know, the other thing to know real quickly here before we get to the phone lines and so forth, the Rams, it's going to be very interesting how they adjust. I know they went out there,
they're out there
right
already.
After the Lions game, but the reason I bring that up is, you know, we're talking about the time difference for the Giants. It's an early morning equivalent for the Giants, but 9:30 is reasonable. Most of the players are up and about. Think about it from an L.A. perspective. The Rams players, their 6:30. Body and so forth. I mean, it's the equivalent of 6:30 in the morning going out there and playing a football game.
Well, that's why they went out there early, though.
No, so and I understand that, but sometimes, you know, it takes somewhat of an adjustment for the body to get used to that setting. So it'll be very interesting to see whether or not you have a slow start in this contest as a result of both teams trying to get on London time. And I know the Rams are going to be out there a few days prior, but still, I mean, you don't necessarily know if both teams are going to click that quickly. So that's something at least to keep in mind.
Beef eaters. There
Beef
we go.
Eaters.
That's the term.
That's another
one
I did not see that.
But that's but here we go from Dave Dominic. But that's actually a common mistake. So apparently my thought by common knowledge is not. Those are different guards, not the guys with the big black hats. But those are that's the name that I thought it was.
That's the name you thought. Yeah. But Royal Guard
Royal
Guards, and the Queen's Lifeguards, I think, are suitable.
All right,
politically correct, at least.
All right, I don't know if it's politically correct.
Well, listen, it's no wild nickname. We get photos, too, now.
Good job, Dave. All
Look
right.
at the research that
he's
doing.
Well, these are the guys. They also wear red with black hats, but it's not like a tall hat. It's kind of a smaller hat, and they have, like, really fancy.
Yeah, those look like old-school ones, though.
I think they're all pretty old-school,
well,
to be quite honest with you.
I'm not used to seeing.
Well, these guys are. They're holding pole arms, or halberds, if you will. That's what that weapon is called.
Gotcha.
It's kind of like a spear for the people that aren't familiar with their medieval history. Let's go to JD in North Carolina. Hopefully he doesn't have any spears down there. What's going on, JD? How are you?
Hey, John. Hey, Lance. How's it going today?
What's going on, man?
Not too much. I just want to touch on something that you actually spoke about top of the show.
Yes.
Eli and just how smart he is. I think that really is the reason why the hurry-up offense and the no-huddle works for the Giants with Eli is because you're essentially turning the play calling into a fast-paced chess match, and it's Eli versus the defense. And you got to believe that Eli is going to win that particular type of matchup at least 9 out of 10 times. A lot of the former O-linemen, you know, that played with Eli have spoken about that, you know, how they used to try to compete with him, making the adjustments and calls. And at no point in, you know, like a 10-year period did anybody beat Eli.
Yep.
Making the pre-call snaps and stuff. So I really think that's a huge advantage that they have. And that's Eli's biggest advantage. You know, he's not a guy that's going to take off and run. You know, he's not a guy that is going to throw the ball, you know, 60 yards downfield anymore. He can still throw a deep ball, but his biggest advantage, like you said, is that he is going to analyze stuff and come up with the adjustments faster than anybody else. So I would really like to see them, and I know everybody says this every year, but if they could really get into that type of offense more, I don't see anything but good things happening.
JD, look, I agree with your points on Eli, but a lot of people have made such a big deal about this hurry-up offense. the Giants have been going no huddle on nearly every possession this year. Now, are they, you know, going super fast with no huddle? No, but they're not huddling up and taking their time either. I mean, people do realize the Giants are one of the last teams in the league in terms of time of possession.
They're dead last. They're not one of the last. They're dead last. 30
right.
seconds.
Thank you. Appreciate that, Lance. Good work. But, you know, I'm not willing to buy this whole the no-huddle offense is what solved the Giants' problems against the Ravens. I think Odell Beckham's three catches of 40 yards or more and one for 80 and one for 66 is what solved the Giants' problems against the Ravens. So if it continues to work, maybe I'll change my mind and I'll buy into it. But I don't think this you know, hurry-up offense is this panacea that I think is going to solve everything, because I don't think the Giants were playing slow before this past game.
No, they weren't. It's just they were going up against well-disciplined defenses.
Yeah.
And wide receivers and quarterbacks weren't on the same page, and you had mental mistakes and so forth. Listen, sometimes you have a game where everything seems to click, and you take advantage of what you were talking on, the anatomy of the play, where the safety comes down, and all of a sudden it opens things up down the field. That wasn't happening, though, against the Vikings and the Packers.
And it's funny, JD, and just want to piggyback on what Lance said right there. I talked to Cruz after the game. And I asked him, why were you able to get big plays this week when you weren't able to get them in weeks past? And he said, flat out, he goes, John, this team showed us different looks defensively
That's
than other teams did.
Yeah.
They, you know, they played a lot more single safety high. They played a lot more man-to-man with one safety deep. And when you're going to do that, there's a lot more room to get balls down the field and make big plays. And the Giants are able to take advantage of it. And quite frankly, the Rams, I think, will play similarly to what the Ravens did. Based on the way Greg Williams plays, they want to blitz just like the Ravens do. Now, could Greg Williams change what he does, JD, and, you know, try to copy what the Packers, the Vikings, the Redskins, and even the Saints to a certain extent tried to do? Sure, but the way Greg Williams likes to play is like the Ravens like to play. They like to blitz a lot. They play single safety high, and we'll see if he's willing to adjust what he normally does on defense or if he's going to be stubborn. But I think the Giants will have chances for more big plays this week against the Rams, given their issues on defense.
Well, the one thing I will add, though, I think the Rams, from a health perspective, are in much better shape than the Ravens entering
That's
this
fair.
Game from a defensive standpoint.
No, Robert Quinn did miss their last game.
Robert Quinn did, but everybody else played.
And Rockers they had played, and
William
Johnson
Hayes
played,
too.
Hayes
he was
played.
Also
okay.
dealing with an injury. Tremaine Johnson, their top corner, also missed the last game.
He
but
missed.
They do anticipate okay. that he could return for the London game. He had an ankle injury that he was dealing with. Go ahead, JD. Yeah.
If they want to play, you know, some more cover one in this upcoming game, that'd be great. And I don't want to make it seem like, you know, the fast-paced offense was a panacea. But I do think it would be beneficial to kick it up a little more with that. The time of possession, that probably, I would, my opinion would be that has more to do with the running game than anything else.
That's fair, of course.
One thing I wanted to ask you guys as far as the coverages that they're going to see, I mean, now that the Ravens have basically shown you what happens when a defense doesn't cover two against the Giants, do you guys think that they're ever going to see cover one for the rest of the season?
Sure.
I mean, I'd be shocked.
No, look, JD, here's the thing, and thanks a lot for the call. We appreciate it. Defensive coordinators are stubborn. I mean, sometimes these guys want to do what they want to do. And they're going to say, look, we just think our guys are better than yours. We're going to play what we play, and we're going to try to beat you. And I'm not, and I don't want to make it out either, Lance, that this had everything to do with the scheme. The Giants players also beat the Ravens players. You can play cover one and still play good defense, but yeah. Your players have to be able to do what's required of them in that defensive scheme. And once Jimmy Smith got hurt, once Jarrod Powers got hurt, and Sharice Wright was banged up heading into the game.
Excuse me. Yes.
That's why you have a cough button, folks. They weren't able to execute what they had to execute in that defense. So, and frankly, the Rams have had some issues back there, too, in their back half this year. So,
yeah, they've given up a number of big plays. Yeah. I mean, they're coming off a Lions game where Matthew Stafford was throwing the ball around like crazy. And Lions also had been very up and down in terms of their offensive play. However, Case Keenum also probably is coming off arguably his best performance, too. I think the Rams' offense has turned the corner over the last few weeks. They've been starting to put up some points when they were anemic going back to that opener against San Francisco when they didn't score any points. But your point about, you know, different defenses that teams are going to showcase the Giants, I think it is going to fluctuate because I think teams are going to stick to what's their strength.
Yeah.
And it depends on their personnel and so forth. But, you know, the other thing that I wanted to point out with the Ravens game, two guys don't collide on that last Odell Beckham touchdown. You know, who's to say that perhaps he has as much of an opening to get across the field? I mean, that was, listen, you take advantage of other teams' mistakes.
That's what you have to do. And that's what good teams do, by the
correct.
Way.
Correct. That was an opportune moment,
right.
And Beckham said, thank you very much, and I will be now zigzagging through the entire Ravens defense.
Bye-bye.
Yes, exactly.
201-939-4513. By the way, from a Rams perspective offensively, you know, people love Todd Gurley, and he's a great player. But to say teams are focusing on him, I think would be the understatement of the century. So far this year,
he's had a
Todd Gurley just 346 yards. That's in six games played. So that's slightly more than 57 yards per game, 2.9 yards per carry, 3 touchdowns, and 2 fumbles. So he has had a rough start to the year, and the Giants will try to continue that rough start in London. Marco, Connecticut, line 3. You're up next. How are you, Marco?
Good, guys. How are you?
Doing great, Marco. How are you, pal?
I'm doing great. Thank you. I called last week, and I thought that the Ravens game was a must-win, and I'm so happy that despite all the craziness that, you know, went on, especially in the second half, I'm happy we came out with the win. And like Coach said, we'll continue to, you know, clean up the pieces as we go, and hopefully, you know, these things get corrected and we don't come back to bite us. But I'm calling more about, like, this. I wanted to call last week or a few days ago, but this is kind of like a big picture look at our defense, and I'm wondering if, you know, what your take was on it.
Yes.
You know, Spagnuolo is here, and we get a look at him now, and we get a look at him back when he was back here in 07 and 08. My view on Spags and the way he runs his defense is, especially early on, back in those years, it was like a bend, especially like opening drive of the game. You would see the defense kind of bend, view what's going on. He's known to make these great changes throughout the game. But then we would always see this pass rush kind of come in waves. And, you know, I know we had these outstanding all-pro bookends with OC and Strahan. Tuck came on a little bit. More as Spagnuolo left, Tuck really turned it on. But now when I'm looking at this defense, and I, you know, last year is really tough because of the bad year they had. But when I heard about, like, last year when Awani Unga was out there, Robert Ayers, JPP playing banged up, Cullen Jenkins, older, banged up, no Jonathan Hankins. We heard the same thing. Well, they're a bend but don't break defense. And it's hard to get teams off the field on third down. But what I'm seeing now is the one-on-one battles that JPP and Vernon are having. And I've been reading a little bit the last few days on how the Ravens did use tight ends and running backs to chip the DNs throughout the game. Fair. But I'm having a hard time. But Vernon and JPP truly don't, at least on television, they don't look like they're winning one-on-one battles. You know, I think one of them, I think JPP may have had a sack. I might be wrong.
He does. They each have a sack.
No, but the only sacks in the last game, though, were Hankins and Landon Collins.
Correct.
Those are the two.
But they each have a sack on the season, though.
Correct.
Yeah, right. So I guess just to wrap this up, I'm kind of wondering, and especially on third down, man, it's so, like, I'm biting my tongue every third down if we can get a team off. And that's going to be the battle. That will be the true battle when we play Dallas, because they are so good on third down because
they
of
are.
What they're able to do on first and second down.
Correct.
Is the difference between Spags now and Spags of the early years, is it because there's no true Antonio Pierce on this team? He doesn't have that middle linebacker. And by the way, I know some people think that position has been phased out. I don't think so. Not with Spagnuolo. You look around, some of the top defenses in the league have great middle linebackers. Or which would make me feel a whole lot better, is Darian Thompson just such a big loss that maybe we underestimate it because he's a rookie? And I like to think of Spags can do some serious stuff with Thompson and Collins and Burhe as the three-headed monster back there. But what's your take on my big-picture look at the defense?
I think there are a lot of levels to it, Marco, to be honest with you. I think one you didn't bring up was the fact that they had a lot of corners injured the last couple weeks. I think you saw the difference in the game against the Ravens, having both DRC, who looked much closer to full strength than he did the previous week against the Packers, and you had Janoris Jenkins out there, and I think that's a big factor, because I think once Steve Spagnuolo can trust his corners to cover, and we saw it against Baltimore, Lance, they brought a lot more blitzes. We saw Landon Collins come
that's
on
the
safety the blitz. They had a couple overload blitzes on one side. And I think when he has those guys that can cover, he'll send more pressure. The other part that I'll address, and I'll let Lance hit the rest of it, I don't think at this point so far JPP and Olivier Vernon in terms of rushing the passer. I think they've both been great against the run, but in terms of rushing the passer, they have not been as effective in beating their guys and getting to the quarterback as, say, you know, Strahan and OC and Tuck and even JPP's second year in the league when he was, what, 16 and a half sacks I think he had that season. I don't think they've been as good as those guys were when they were in their primes.
Yeah, I think that's a fair comparison. I'd also throw out the fact that we haven't seen much rotation from the defensive line, too, as we've seen when Spags was here the first time around.
Remember, Tuck was the third guy.
There you go. So you had more veterans, you had more guys that you felt were going to be effective as you shift personnel in and out on those third downs, Marco. I think that's another big difference between the 07 team and the 08 team versus what you're seeing right now. It'll be interesting, though. I think it'll be important moving forward that maybe as they get more practice time that they start to allow these guys like Double O and Kerry Wynn to spread their wings, because I don't think JPP and Vernon can survive playing this many snaps every single game. I think you need production. That's what the Giants pass rushers of the past, they had not just two options, John. They had three, four, sometimes five options. You need volume. You need stock. And the point you brought up about the secondary, I'll even go back to the Saints game. The Saints game, when the two sacks they had were also from the secondary with Leon Hall and Landon Collins, everybody was fully healthy. So Spags said, hey, we'll be creative. We'll bring guys to the line of scrimmage. We'll blitz. Last few weeks couldn't do that because of the injuries. Now, DRC, as you mentioned, we'll see if Eli Apple returns. Jenkins has always been healthy. Cody Sensabaugh just joined the team. That's another veteran corner who has NFL experience. Now I think Spags is realizing, okay, I got more toys now back in the pen, so now I can be a little bit more aggressive at the line of scrimmage. We're getting back to what happened in the Saints game because the team is closer to full health. These last few weeks, the secondary specifically wasn't close to full health, so he's got to worry about stopping the run. He has to worry about protecting the back end. You don't have a lot of flexibility and room to be creative under those circumstances.
And just in terms of, you mentioned, I think you made a good point, Lance, about the depth of the 07 team. Remember, you had your three ends, and Tuck obviously played tackle in passing down situations. OC had 13 sacks, Tuck had 10, Strahan had 9. So that's three guys, all right? But then, in addition, you got Kiwanuka coming in circumstances. Now, he got hurt at the end of the year, but he did play in the first 10 games that year. He had 4.5 sacks. Fred Robbins, an excellent three-technique defensive tackle, he had 5.5 sacks. And then you had a couple linebackers chipping in. Kawika Mitchell had 3.5 sacks blitzing. He did a very good job. Barry Cofield, the defensive tackle.
Getting
he
pressure.
Had a sack. Reggie Torber had a sack. Sam Madison had a sack. Aaron Ross had a sack. So they had other guys chipping in. And you're right. I don't think right now the Giants are getting a whole lot of their second-line defensive linemen. You haven't heard Jay Bromley's name mentioned a lot. You haven't heard Kerry Wynn's name mentioned a lot. Besides the bad penalty at the end of the game.
Double O.
You haven't heard Oladikizua's name mentioned a lot. So I think there's a lot of pressure being put on these starters to give the defensive line all the production. And, dude, Jonathan Hankins is a big boy. Asking him to play 70 out of 80 snaps is asking a lot. Asking even OV and JPP to do it is asking a lot. So I think you're right. You need to get a little bit more out of your backups in those
Well, games. And speaking of Hankins, it's interesting you brought him up, and I know we've talked about this on previous off seasons, John. You know, you go back 2 years ago, he had the breakout campaign with 7 sacks. But after that season, everyone was wondering, okay, was that a flash, or is that something, an aspect of his game that he's going to be able to build upon? And then unfortunately got hurt last year, but he had no sacks in the 9 games he played, and now he just recorded his first sack since the 2014 season when he had 7. So, you know, what are you going to get from Hankins? Is he going to get back to that 7 sack season, or, you know, was that just, like I said, a breakout flash and not necessarily a sign of what was yet to come?
I do feel like he's been getting more consistent pressure this year, though, than he got last year when he was healthy. I feel like he's in the mix.
Well, playing next to Snacks helps as well.
Well, and playing next to Olivier Vernon and
JPP
also helps.
The force
absolutely.
Them together.
No question about it. But I do think he's been a better pass rusher and, quite frankly, a better player than he was in the first 6 games last year. 201-939-4513. I think he's actually playing really, really good football, to be quite
and
honest
on special
with you.
Teams, too. Remember, he had the block earlier this season
good
as
point.
Well.
Revon, he's down in Atlanta. Revon, what's going on, pal? How are you?
What's going on, guys? This is Levon, but that's
Levon. Levon. Okay. Sorry about that, buddy. How are you?
It's cool. I wanted to call in last week badly, but I work at night and sleep during the day, so I missed the show.
No worries.
I'm doing all right. We got a win. I wanted to talk about Eli, and I wanted to call in last week specifically because everybody was killing him after Green Bay. But he played well. We won, and everybody's been defending him, so I'll just say he's a Hall of Famer. He'll walk into the Hall of Fame when his career is done and leave it at that.
Mm-hmm.
In response to Marco, I mean, JVP's not getting any sacks, but he was great in the game on Sunday. He abused the Lewis kid. He, like, forced two penalties on back-to-back plays. He batted down that screen pass, and on the last drive, he had that that forced, I think, a quarterback hit, or at least a hurry, where Flacco had the incompletion. So he's not getting sacks, but he's everywhere, and this is the best I've seen him play in a long time. And he seems like, you know, he's a leader out there. He doesn't have the C, no Captain C, but he's in guys' faces, and he's leading the huddle, and guys respond to him. So he's playing well, and Landon Collins is playing well. Landon Collins. That game yesterday, Landon Collins was everywhere. He's one of my favorite Giants on this team.
Now, I want to add one thing, Levon, about Landon Collins. I agree. He's very active, really good around the ball, and close to the line of scrimmage. Still needs to do some work on locating the ball in the air and doing some of the stuff in the secondary.
You're right, because that center field play where he just blew by Perryman when he could have just jumped up and picked that ball off, I was grabbing my forehead like, man, but that's not his game. He's downhill. He likes to tackle. He likes to hit. But I wanted to call to talk about the offense, specifically the running game. I mean, it's never as good as it looks when you win. It's never as bad as it looks when you lose. And the running game is a glaring weakness. I mean, not even 50 yards on the ground. Jennings only had nine rushes. I don't know if it was because of his thumb. But we got to get some production out of that running game. I mean, especially later in the year when teams – I don't know why Baltimore didn't do what everybody else did against us. I hate to say it, but they kind of let us off the hook by not going cover two and just taking away Odell and the rest of the receivers because it was working. And they decided to go cover one, and we still had no run game. And, I mean, that's on Harbaugh, and I'm pretty sure he's under fire going for it. On fourth and goal and all that, you know, with whoever's in Baltimore. But we won the game. But the running game needs to get fixed. And the last thing I want to say about Eric Flowers, and I'm trying to catch my breath. I don't know why. But Eric Flowers, 2 years in the league. He's only 2 years in the league. He played well against Terrell Suggs yesterday. He hasn't played terrible all year. He had one really bad game. The guy played hurt all last year on a bad ankle. He's only 2 years in the league. He's big, athletic. The only thing he really needs to do is learn technique. Give him some time to learn technique. Go around the league a few times. Around 3 year four, if he still hasn't progressed into a Pro Bowler, maybe you can say that pick was a waste, but you're not going to sit down a first-round pick. Not for Will Beatty. You're just not going to do it. You're not going to shatter his confidence. And big ups to Justin Pugh. He's playing great. It took him 3 to 4 years to get to that point. He didn't start off, you know, this game.
Well, remember, he also moved positions, too. Let's not forget about that, Levon. He didn't stay in his normal spot as a rookie.
Thank you, Levon.
Yeah. That's what I got. All right.
Appreciate the phone call.
A couple of notes from Pro Football Focus. I know people kind of get upset about their rankings sometimes and things like that. And, again, this is not science. This is just a tool in the toolbox based on what you see, okay? So I want to be very careful about that. But a couple people have asked about the defensive ends, Lance. Where do you think JPP and Olivier Vernon rank, according to Pro Football Focus, among 4-3 defensive ends? They have 48 total players with enough qualifying snaps. Where do you think OV and JPP rank among 4-3 defensive ends?
I would say they're probably in the middle of the pack.
JPP 6th.
Wow.
Olivier Vernon 9th.
Interesting.
So both very, very
strong
good.
Against the run, which helps them. I mean, the Giants' defense has been pretty good against the run.
They
Let's
actually
not forget
have
about
JPP
that.
Ranked much better rushing the passer than they do against the run. They have Olivier Vernon much better against the run than they have rushing
the
quarterback.
The passer.
Maybe, by the way, and if you look at those numbers, the Giants have been swapping Vernon and JPP
Correct.
On those sides of the field. Maybe
they
see the same
Bay.
Thing. They see JPP rushing the passer a little bit better. Maybe that's why they're putting them out on the blind side
Possible.
Of the quarterback.
Makes sense.
In terms of Justin Pugh, and I think Giant fans would be interested to hear this, he right now is the top-rated guard in football, according to Pro Football Focus. Ahead of Zach Martin, ahead of Josh Sitton, he's right now number one. He's played extremely well, almost equally as good with the run as with the pass, just playing good football. And John Jerry is 15 out of about 35 or so. So he's right in the middle of the pack, which is also good.
Well, and one of the things that we started talking about at the top of the show, you know, we talked about pass protection a little, but
18th, excuse me, for John Terry.
Overall?
In terms of guards. Yes. They have, okay. Let's see, how many? They have 78 guards with enough snaps. He's 18th. So that's pretty good.
So you have your two starting guards in the top 20 at that position.
Mm-hmm.
That's not bad at all.
And again, this is just grain of salt. Obviously, it's one tool, but it's something
one of many
note
different
of.
Things.
And remember, they had Weston Richburg ranked really high last year as a top five center. They have him struggling this year, 31 out of 35 centers. So they have Weston Richburg struggling so far. Just, again, a tool you look at. And so they gave you the guards and centers. I might as well give you the tackles, too, while I'm at it, just so we get the full picture of the offensive line. Right now, let's see. I've actually not looked at this until just now. So let's see. Where do we have Flowers and Bobby Hart? And I wonder if they have Newhouse on here from this first game as well. Let's see.
Depends, I guess, on the sample
Marshall
size.
Newhouse for in 123 snaps, so I guess that's about a game and a half. 33rd among tackles. Eric Flowers, 43rd among tackles. And Bobby Hart, 59th among tackles of 79 rated. So right now, if you had to pick a strength of the Giants' offensive line, again, based on what Pro Football Focus is seeing,
interior.
It would be the guards.
Guards, yep.
Just something I thought I'd throw out there.
No, important to note in terms of the production. What I was going to say is I think the most encouraging aspect of the offensive line's play against the Ravens is no penalties. None of those false starts. None of those holds,
yeah.
Correct, or the delay of games.
I mean, that could short-circuit drives.
Oh, it has. It's
yeah.
been well-documented that it short-circuited drives. That, to me, was the most encouraging. Everybody wants to talk about the run game, pass protection. But look at the last previous games. The fact that the offense was responsible for 12 of the 25 penalties charged for the team during the three-game skid, John. That's about half of those penalties going against the offense. And the majority of those offensive penalties are not even anything that the defense is causing. It's the fact that you shoot yourselves in the foot when you get to the line of scrimmage before you even get into the flow of your offense, those procedural errors. And they eliminated them at least against the Ravens, and Baltimore did not eliminate them. That was a big disparity between both of these teams.
201-939-4513. Back to the phones. Carl's in Syracuse. Carl, let's all go on rapid fire these last 15 minutes, guys. I want to make sure we get as many guys in as we can. Carl, what's going on?
John, Lance. Great to hear you guys. You're always doing a good job keeping things in perspective.
Thank you, Carl.
Appreciate that.
You only like too far up. You only get too far down. We try to, you know, after a loss, we try to bring people up. After a big win, we try to make sure people stay a little bit level.
That's right. That's right. You know, I know this was the week we were hoping for a low-scoring game and to clean things up. And, you know, it just turned into the same bizarre narrative that you just can't make these things up.
Yep.
We were -3 in the turnover differential again, and we still pulled off a victory.
Can't make it up.
It's rare to do. We did it again. Like you guys said, keeping things in perspective, we cleaned up the penalties in certain areas. And if you look at the yardage we gave up on the penalties, one of them was, you know, the PI interference call that we disagree with.
Yes.
That gave up a chunk of yards.
Well, and also the Trevin Wade pass interference,
there was
too. There were two.
Mask on the long pass to
Jenkins.
Wallace, which might have saved a touchdown. So that's a good penalty.
No, it might have saved a touchdown. That saved a touchdown. He walks in if Jenkins doesn't grab him by that face mask and drag him down. So,
right.
You know,
I'll take that all day.
Absolutely.
That's a good point.
And you know what? It's actually a good point, too. And Dave Dominic brought this up, our producer, before the show. Even the Beckham helmet penalty, yeah, you know, let's say he doesn't commit that penalty, right? The Giants probably kick it into the end zone. They down it. They take it at the 25. After that penalty, they returned it to the 31, right? So it was 6 yards, but that 6 yards extra took 9 seconds of clock to execute the return. So if the Giants can trade 6 yards of field position for 9 seconds on the clock, quite frankly, they probably take it.
Right. And then playing above the X's and O's, everybody came together. All of the game, it seemed, JPP had like 3 passes defensed. So he was getting his hands up.
Yep.
How many tackles for loss did Hankins have on top of the, you know, cleanup sack that he had?
Hold on, right?
Fourth and goal stand.
Jonathan Hankins had 3 tackles for loss during the game. Good call.
And then the only thing that was frustrating for me is we're giving up too many first downs, and the linebackers, it's just like there was one play in particular, back leaks out, you know, out of the backfield. how do you not even see him tackle him until 8 yards downfield was the first contact? It's frustrating.
Yeah. You know, there were some missed coverages on the fullback out of the backfield early on in that game that they managed to clean up later on.
Juszczyk, who had a few, where he also bounced off a defender as well.
So, you know, in the interview with Odell Beckham, he even said the same thing. You know, there's things we got to clean up. We got to look at the film. But, you know, it's great to have this win and go into the Rams game with some momentum.
Thank you, Carl.
Absolutely.
Thank
All right, Carl.
Appreciate
Thanks
it.
Thanks so much for waiting. Appreciate
Let's go to Sean out in California. He's up next. Again, we're trying to rapid fire here, you guys. Sean, what's going on?
Hi, guys. You guys made a lot of good points that I wanted to cover, and I'm just going to make it fast.
Sure, go ahead.
You guys already covered most of my points.
Yes, sir.
The Rams secondary is all the way at the top, you know, in pass yards and 1 yards. Rams is all the way at the top in a lot of different categories, but the one category that they're not is the one category that I think the London game might come down to. You know, the top five in the defensive line, I mean, it's going to be hard for us to run the ball. And, you know, I think this game is going to come down to our offensive line. And I was going to talk about the Ravens win and the things we could have done right. Even though we won, I just wanted to, you know, we still had over 100 yards in penalties. And, you know, I don't want to say lucky, but we had a good game, but the game kind of went our way, and I'm grateful for that. I was going to touch into some other stuff, but you guys already covered it. And then I'm going to leave it at this. I'll take you guys' call off the air. I want to know the status on Eli Apple and Thompson. And then you guys have good rest of your day.
Yeah, you too, Sean. Thank you. Darian Thompson, there hasn't really been much progress from what we can tell, at least from a visible standpoint. He's still in a boot. He's not really doing anything in practice as far as I can tell. I haven't seen him this week. He could be out of it now, but as of last week, he was still walking around the boot.
Well, from what I heard, he is out of the boot.
He is out of the boot
now.
Paul
brought that up yesterday.
He is,
He is out of the boot, but I would not anticipate seeing him until after the bye at the earliest.
And quite frankly,
depending on the timeline.
And I think we'll talk about this over the course of the week. With the bye week coming up, Lance, you got to think for these defensive backs with lower body injuries, you take the extra week.
Of course.
It's not like the Rams are running out a bunch of all-pro wide receivers here, folks. You got Kenny Britt, Brian Quick, and then Tavon Austin.
Ends.
Yeah, but it's no one that puts the fear of God.
No, it's not a prolific vertical stretch type of offense.
You want to make sure you got Darian Thompson and Eli back healthy after the bye when you start going through another tough part of the schedule, and you got A.J. Green and Jordan Matthews and, you know, all the Alshon Jeffrey and, you know, Antonio Brown and all those guys staring you in the face. That's when you want to have those guys back and healthy. So I think the Giants will be very cautious with the guys they have hurt and make sure they're right. Don't make them, you know, do all this stuff quick and like what happened to Eli Apple 2 weeks ago.
Re-aggravated the injury. Yeah, you don't want to do that. And I agree with you. I think it makes sense to hold these guys back. Plus, that was one of the reasons why they just brought in Cody Sensabaugh. At least you have another veteran in the mix who actually happens
to
know the team.
And he also played,
He did play immediately. So that was nice to see, encouraging. And if there's any team he knows well, it's the opponent this week because he just came from the Rams.
Probably looking for a little payback, too. In fact,
absolutely,
if you guys want to get a feel for the Rams, I believe if you are a subscriber to HBO, you can check out Hard Knocks on Demand.
Correct, yes.
If you want a good scouting report, just watch that show, folks. You can hang out with Mike Waffle a little bit, former Giants
defensive line coach,
yelling and screaming. People
He had some personality in that show.
Like a Marine drill sergeant. Scary man, but very nice man. That's the funny. You watch that show, you think Mike Waffle's the scariest man ever. he's a great dude. He really is.
Well, I think it seems as if the defensive linemen respect him because they know where he's coming from.
Yeah.
And they have a lot of players that they rotate, which is what we were talking about earlier with the 07 team, with what Spags did with the Giants. You know, the Rams, I know you mentioned Robert Quinn missed the last game. He may play, but, you know, Ethan Westbrooks, who is not a starter, you know, he gets a lot of reps. You also have Eugene Sims. He's another player that doesn't necessarily start. He gets reps. They have a good 6 to 7 defensive linemen that they like to rotate so that they keep them fresh during the course of a contest.
How about this stat? And we talked about how they're not really resting JPP and Olivier Vernon much. I'll tell you straight up, they have by far the most snaps of any defensive ends in the league.
Does not surprise me.
Now, here's my other thing. The third guy is Muhammad Wilkerson. He is 374. JPP is 428. Vernon has 411.
So they're 1 and 2.
Correct. And Muhammad Wilkerson at 374 is 3. How many snaps do you think the fourth and fifth most played defensive ends have?
Well, from what you're spelling out, I'm thinking it's a rather big disparity. So I'm going to say that the next guy on the list is probably somewhere in the 200s.
Close. The fourth guy is Cameron Jordan for the Saints. He is 328. So
okay.
A full 100 fewer snaps than JPP through 6 weeks. That's more than 15 snaps a game. The fifth guy on the list, also somebody the Giants have played this year, Everson Griffin from the Vikings.
Well, but look at how much depth the Vikings have.
299.
Too. Yeah.
But again, there's only four. Check that. There's only two players in the NFL at defensive end with more than 400 defensive snaps.
And they're
snaps.
Both on the same team.
OV and JPP.
That's remarkable.
There's only two players between 300 and 400. Wilkerson and Cameron Jordan. No other defensive end is more than 300 snaps. JPP and OV have more than 400.
Yeah.
That's 25% plus than pretty much every other defensive end in football.
Well,
That's nuts.
And in fairness, Spags was asked about this before the Ravens game.
No, he says he wants to get more
he
guys
does.
In.
He does, yes. He was specifically asked. This is not something that all of a sudden has come to their
no,
awareness.
They've talked about it.
They've
they
talked about this, but now the key is, well, I should say specifically after the bye, because during the bye week you tend to self-scout. You look at the numbers a little bit more closely. You hope that...
And these guys get the rest.
Correct.
They're going to need it.
But even entering that three-game homestand, John, I think the importance and the emphasis needs to be on trying to get some of these other defensive linemen more snaps so that as you get down the stretch of the season, JPP and Vernon are not that much ahead of the rest of the league here.
And I think another thing that comes into it, Lance, and I don't want to put words in Steve Spagnuolo's mouth because he didn't actually say this, but you've got to think that he's sitting there and he's like, oh, man, I got DRC out. I got Eli Apple out. Or I got Apple out and DRC banged up, but he's going to try and play. I better get to the freaking quarterback or we're in trouble. So he's going to be really scared of taking those two guys off the field and expose a banged-up secondary. So maybe once he gets some of these guys back,
then it's
he'll
easier
have a little
to
bit
rotate
more confidence.
Players. You can take your stars out. Well, what do you think Dean Pease, the Ravens defensive coordinator, was thinking throughout the course of the contest? Exactly what you
Earl
just
Suggs,
laid out.
Go get him.
That's what he said. He looked at his secondary. He said, these guys are dropping like flies. Yeah. Suggs, you better get a few more sacks.
And by the way, one of the reasons they were able to probably tire that defensive line out, you combine the fact that they probably left their starters in a while. I haven't looked at the snap counts. I can bring it up.
Well, but here's the thing, John.
But,
the Giants scored
but,
on a lot of big plays, though. And remember.
True, but I think no huddle, though, there isn't a lot
of
rest
wore them down a little
plays,
bit.
You
that's
know
fair.
I mean?
But, you know, a lot of the touchdowns for the Giants were big bombs. So it wasn't as if the Giants put together 10 plays, 85-yard drives and so forth. I wouldn't think.
You know what? They rotated.
The snaps are up there.
They rotated. Terrell Suggs, Timmy Jernigan, 48 snaps. Brandon Williams, 36.
Well, because the defensive line was healthy. But
Suggs, 48. Yeah, I mean, they all the backup defensive linemen were getting snap counts in the 20s and stuff. So, yeah, you're right. They actually did. There was about 67 defensive snaps, and 48 was the most by a defensive lineman. So they got a decent amount
Which
of rest.
Which is a good number.
Yeah.
It's a good balance there, mm-hmm. And that's what you want to aim for.
All right, let's go back to the calls. Matt Need Islip, you're up next. Matt, what's going on? And then Lawrence in Florida, you're up last. You stay with us. We'll get to you next. Matt, what's going on?
Hey, guys. I'll try to be quick. I know you guys are trying to run through this and finish up.
That's okay. Go ahead, Matt.
You know, I think you guys touched on a bunch of stuff, and I have one thing on Larry Dunell I want to talk about. I tweeted you guys. And
mm-hmm.
But also, you know, just going back to the point with the snap counts and the depth, you know, Lance, you said the Vikings, you know, the Everson Griffin, they have so much depth. Well, also, not just they have depth, they have quality depth. Like, Danielle Hunter is a beast.
Correct. He's their third swing guy.
You know what I mean? We have depth, too. It's just they're not getting there. So why give them more snaps if, I mean, they have to give them snaps for, you know, give the guys a break. But that's really the difference I see with this Giants team compared to, let's say, the Vikings or somebody else. Because how are you going to get the other guys quality snaps when they're not getting there? So that's the point.
Well, and that goes back. I think that's a great point, Matt. And it goes back to what they're seeing in practice. For example, right. When the Vikings practice, if Hunter is getting to the quarterback constantly and beating the offensive lineman, it warrants them putting him on the field. Whereas, you know, what are the Giants coaches seeing behind JPP and Vernon? Are guys right. like Double O and Kerry Wynn and Bromley showing them enough that they're saying to themselves, in the event we take JPP and Vernon off the field, the level of production remains as is? You know, that's something that they have to weigh right. during the course of practice. I think that's a fair point.
Yeah, I mean, you saw it from Aquara in the preseason, hasn't done it really since. And then double O, the only play he really has made, in all fairness, is the penalty that would have ended the game if he didn't. So, to be honest with you, I mean, he just, you know, but that's that. And then the last thing I have on Donnell, I mean, how many Giant fans have watched the game when Larry Donnell, and you don't cringe, because I just don't know. The guy, his body is everywhere. He exposes the ball. They said it on CBS.
Talking about this yesterday.
Who holds the ball out like that? It reminded me of Plaxico Burress. Holding the ball with one hand and just floating it around. Like,
it's frustrating. I hear you.
Yes, it is. You know, and I mean, the only time he's really consistent is in the red zone. I mean, he does have good hands. I will give him that. He's a big guy. He goes up for it. Very good in the red zone. But other than that, you know, down the middle of the field, I'm concerned, even if he's got a free run.
There are there are things that Larry Donnell has to clean up. No one would argue with that.
And leaving his feet is certainly one of them, just because he exposes himself to a turnover. Especially after you get a big game, the last thing you want to do is cough the football up.
Larry Donnell needs to do a lower the shoulder drill. Like
run him over, leap over them. Right. It was a great hurdle, as I brought up to Paul yesterday, but you don't get brownie points.
You're 265. Use your body.
Yeah.
Right. Well, Will Ty does that, to be honest with you. I mean, Will Ty's not going to burn you.
Now, he's shorter, though, too. Right. He's also shorter and low to the ground. Easier for him to do it.
Sure. Absolutely. And I understand that. And I think, you know, just with that said, I mean, I don't understand on the third down play. I thought he had an easy just from the looks of it. I mean, you guys may have looked it over again. You know, just your take on that play. I thought he had the first down, which shouldn't even have put the Giants in the
Now, it seemed to me, Matt, and look, I think he could have gotten the first down if he wanted to, but I think he decided it was more important for him to get out of bounds than get the first down. Now, I think at a better angle, he maybe could have done both. But I think he was so worried about getting out of bounds that he forgot about the marker. And that's my guess.
So, yeah, I agree with that. So even if, let's just say he was worried about that, gets the first down. Let's say he doesn't get out of bounds, but he gets the first down. So then the Giants have the first down, spike the ball then.
I agree. Matt, right. Absolutely. No one's arguing with you.
All right. Thanks, guys. Appreciate
thanks,
it.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Appreciate the
call. All right. Lawrence in Florida wants to piggyback on Larry Donnell talk. Lawrence, what's going on, pal? How are you?
Hi. Thanks for having me. And, you know, this guy stole all my thunder, as they say in the trade.
Sorry about that, Lawrence.
Larry Donnell, this guy is going to give me a nervous breakdown.
Nervous breakdown,
this guy,
wow.
He catches the ball. Just get the first down. He sits there, he's going sideways. He's making moves. And then you ever watch him block, he looks like he's out there at some wedding trying to do the chicken dance. He sticks his elbow out. If I would just put him in the red zone, let him jump up, and then tell him, you go sit down there and relax.
It's the second chicken reference on this show. Wow.
That Jarrell Adams, that guy, like the last 2 weeks, whatever it was, he made a nice play. He caught the ball. He went up. He got the first down, got out of bounds, stopped the clock. That's develop him. This Larry Donnell. I've been talking to some of my friends about this guy, and it's become a joke. You know, every time he catches a ball, he lands in his head. He's always landing on his head. The first time I ever saw him trying to get more yards, usually he goes straight down. He passed a ball 5 feet from his body and trying to jump over somebody. He goes this guy out of his mind. I would have had a nervous breakdown if they didn't pull that last play with Odell. And that play kind of reminded me of that one a few years ago with Victor Cruz against the Cowboys.
Yeah, a little bit.
Cruz came along, caught it, and ran up the side. But I don't know what this Larry did now. I don't know what we're going to do with this guy.
I think, was it against the Rams last year that Beckham had a slant and he ran for long for a touchdown? 2 years ago against the Rams, did he have that play too where he had a slant and he ran? That's
maybe
one of those plays.
Maybe.
You know, Beckham's so fast after the catch where if you can get him running free on those slants
and the
angle and the defense is slightly off in terms of their angle and spacing, he can break any one of those for a touchdown. Absolutely.
I'm telling you, but I like to see him kind of cool it down a little too. I mean, he should try to act like I can make these touchdowns and it's no big deal. Like, it just kind of let everyone else get all excited and just act like, big deal. You know, for me, it's nothing. For you guys, it would be something. Just be calm and cool. I think that would come off better than just running around like a maniac. I mean, I like the enthusiasm, but just try to act a little calm and cool.
Well, but keeping emotions in check. Understandable. Appreciate the phone call, Lawrence. Thanks so much for chiming
in. Thanks for having me.
You got it. Had an 80-yard touchdown in that game 2 years ago, Odell Beckham. But from what I recall, I thought that was a deep pass that he caught. I'm trying to look up if it was a short pass, and then he took it to the house. It was a three-play, 80-yard drive. Let's see, third and 10 from the Giants' 20. Yeah, Manning passed deep down the middle of the field to Beckham for 80 yards. He did have a long touchdown against the Rams 2 years ago, but it wasn't off a slant. But like you said, John, you get him out in open space.
There was definitely a play the last 2 years where he caught a slant and just went up the middle of the field and was gone. I forget what game it was. He had so many of them.
Yes.
I mean, come on.
Of course, which is a good problem to have in terms of the memory bank.
By the way,
so
to note, Lance, just one other thing. Jonathan Hankins, fourth most snaps among defensive tackles with 343.
So there's another disparity.
Only Sue, Tuitt, and Leonard Williams has more. But he's more in the neighborhood.
He's closer to the pack than the defensive end you're talking about.
Yeah,
but still,
right in the mix.
But you still have... Right. Players that are on your team that are leading in snaps at both defensive tackle and defensive end compared to the rest of the league.
And so. Damon Harrison is 19th among defensive tackles. So they've been getting him off the field on passing down.
Which is not a surprise because that was his MO with the Jets.
And that's great.
Yeah.
You should be.
He's in to stop the run, and then you bring in some other guys in terms of third down passing situations.
Absolutely. Remember last year he played about 55% of the snaps, and this year I guess he's probably much higher than that. I think he's probably way above 55%. I don't know how many total defensive snaps the Giants have taken. Snacks has 268 snaps. The Giants, it looks like, have probably taken about 460. So I'd say he's probably around 60% of the snaps or so. That's just doing the math very quickly in my head. It might not be right. But there you have it. So.
Yeah, I think it's something they'll probably look at during the bye week.
All right, so tomorrow we're going to have Big Blue Kickoff back here on Giants.com. It'll be Tino and either Cross or David Deal. We haven't figured that out yet. And then on Thursday, I'm trying to get Feagles to come in, and we'll see who hosts then. So we're still kind of in flux here trying to figure out how this is all going to work with the London trip. Stay tuned to Giants.com. We'll have everything for you as the Giants get ready to go to London to take on the Rams in the next couple of days. For Lance Meadow, I am John Schmelk. Thank you so much for being part of the show on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. We'll see you next time, everybody. Have a great day.
Have a good one.